we're safe, but I don't know how sound I am right now with everything that's gone on in the last 18 to 20 hours.
It's a roller coaster.
We're just operating on caffeine at this point.
I mean, it's a roller coaster right now. Is that fair
really
to say?
Is. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a story that has so many different subplots, from the players to the coaches to the presidents, from conference to conference, from region to region. I mean, it is ever evolving and fast moving in a lot of different ways.
So let me start with the Jim Harbaugh statement today. First of all, to his credit, I thought it was well-crafted, intelligent, in my personal opinion. What did you think when you read that this morning, the way he laid it out?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any secret that Harbaugh and all these coaches, I mean, James Franklin issued a statement, Scott Frost has been very vocal today. You know, you've seen it from Ryan Day. They want to play because they've been given assurances by their own medical teams that this is the way to go. This is the place to be. This is how we can do it, and this is how we can do it safely. But, again, these are guys that aren't necessarily used to the evolving nature of what a pandemic is and the research and how quickly that's moving on the medical side. And, you know, that's going to be an interesting case here to see who really is the power brokers with this. I mean, all these coaches are coming together. You've got athletes that are becoming unified. I don't want to say unionized because I don't think they can unionize, but they certainly are more unified than they've ever been right now with this. They want to play too, but their caveat is they want to be doing it safely. They want to be assured that the testing is uniform across the board and not done just simply by Michigan staff for how they want to set it up, or how Ohio State staff wants to set it up, or Penn State or Michigan State staff. They want uniformity of this, and I think that's the big cry right now from the player side is, you know, we need to make sure that this is safe. And, you know, obviously the Big Ten releasing the schedule last week and continued intentions to push forward on September 5th with the opener and opening camps on Friday, you know, and guys getting out there, you know, that everything looked like it was moving forward, but the brakes were put on. I think the MAC and the American Conference canceling things. I mean, we have three schools here in Michigan that basically had their seasons ended. They already lost all the revenue from potential non-conference games when the Big Ten shut things down to a conference-only schedule. But then pulling the plug, I think it got a lot of people rethinking things. I think the situation with Brady Feeney at Indiana got things going again.
Sure.
People realizing, hey, this is maybe a little more significant damage than we know, and players and medical staff alike. So I'm curious. It's going to be a battle between academia and also the athletic side. Who wins it? I mean, we're going to find out.
Well, I want to take the coaches out of it for a moment. I think part of this, because I started with Jim Harbaugh because it's the most visible one. James Franklin, Ryan Day, Scott Frost have all talked. But it's been the players and the parents. You know, we talk about it's their game. And the players, one by one, have been either hashtag we want to play or hashtag I want to play. And parents have been crafting letters. Does that have an impact at all? You know, take all the coaches aside. Let's take the athletic director aside. Do the players have any sway in this, in your opinion, Chris?
I think to a certain extent. I think the unity side of it also gives athletic directors pause in some ways. On the other side of it is, you know, do we worry about them essentially demanding to be paid? I think the American Athletic Conference players, there was a report out there late last week, they were starting to discuss or at least putting forth something saying we want 20% of your revenue. Well, geez, I mean, that's significant demand right there. That's being paid.
Yeah.
They wanted hazard pay. You know, I mean, so if you're starting to get unification, you know, do those demands come across the board? The Big Ten players in their statement, you know, I talked to Hunter Reynolds from Michigan at 2 in the morning. He was one of the ones that helped organize it. He made a point to say they were on a different path at that, you know, last week than the Pac-12 players. Pac-12 players threatened to boycott. The Big Ten players never wanted to not play. They just want to play safely. And then you had the we want to play
group with Trevor Lawrence and the guys down in Clemson in the South, when they got on their Zoom call, they found common ground. They all want to play. I mean, it's not like nobody wants to play here. But they want to do it in the safest possible manner that they don't necessarily feel like. And I think that voice is being heard. And if you're having that voice being heard, and you know, the waivers thing, I think, is still an issue. How eligibility might happen if guys opt out is still an issue. All these questions that have not been answered, 5 months after the shutdown of the college basketball season and spring sports. So I think the from their end, they want more clarity. But from the college side, I don't know if they have it right now. I don't think they've come together on a collective. I mean, you're seeing the Big Ten and Pac-12 going one way, the ACC and SEC going another way, the Big 12 kind of in the middle with both. And then the group of five conferences all scattered among that too, with the MAC canceling and others not. So it's a mess in a lot of ways that, you know, there needs to be a better line of communication with all of them. The players definitely wanted to have their voices heard. I don't necessarily know if they were early last week, but they made it pretty loud and clear last night in succession when you have the three of the biggest college stars in succession, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Chuba Hubbard, all putting it out there, saying the same statement, saying the same thing for them and their teammates. That voice was heard overnight, I think. And, now we've got a lot of other questions to be answered.
What's interesting, too, is that those who have expanded upon the basic tweet of hashtag I want to play or hashtag we want to play, when they've expanded upon it, each one has said, I haven't seen one that dissented, that they were completely confident in their school's protocols. I thought that was significant.
Well, there's some. Connor Hayward, Cam Hayward's brother here at Michigan State, was pretty frank. He wants to play, but he also put out there that, hey, I understand and see the risk. Michigan State had a kid on Saturday, Marcel Lewis, who had a family member die of COVID-19, had another hospitalized. He's concerned, and he opted out of the season. Justin Stevens here, an offensive lineman, opted out because he has a respiratory issue, and he doesn't want to put himself in a compromising position. So I think what you're seeing is there are a lot of different sides of that spectrum within the athletes as well. And they don't want retaliation. That's one thing I think that Hunter Reynolds from Michigan, when we talked, and best 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning interview I've ever done, by the way. But he said they don't want any retribution or retaliation if they decide not to play.
Exactly.
And there's a real fear of that.
And that's where they need to come through and be definitive in their statement. You want to opt out, you're playing in 2021, as long as you want to. Just make that statement. If it means that you have to expand the scholarship number by 5 to do it, or give exemptions beyond 85 to make it happen, make it happen. It's a different circumstance than any other time. Because to me, the ability to play or work, for example, I know with us, they asked if we'd be comfortable doing home games, road games, and it's my decision. I said, yeah, I have no problem. But just because I don't have a problem doesn't mean George Blaha does. I mean, he might.
Right.
I don't know. I haven't talked to George. Well, we're professionals, so that's different. But here, if a player, they should be definitive that if a player wants to opt out because it's all about comfort, make sure their spot is assured next year and figure out a way to make that happen. Because it's supposed to be about the student athletes, so just make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, it is supposed to be about student athletes, and I think that's why it's going to be an interesting couple days here. I don't think that these are going to be the last coaches, and I don't think it's going to be the last players to say we want to play without a question. I think what you're going to see is where is the academic side? Where is the? I mean, Michigan State and Michigan both have presidents who are experts in their medical doctors,
yes,
whose field of expertise are immunology and infectious diseases.
I was going to that up, Chris.
Yeah.
I was going to bring that up.
Those are important voices here. And if they're voting to not play, well, those voices should be heard, and they should be heard loud and clear over anybody who wants to put themselves in harm's way, which ultimately then also puts others in harm's way. I mean, a friend of mine who I graduated with from Butler High School, is on the NCAA COVID-19 panel. Dr. Amish Adalja, he's based out of Pittsburgh, but he's now at Johns Hopkins. We've spoken at least once a month since all this went down, and we talked the other day, and he told me that early on he thought that football could be played safely, but with the rising cases, with the potential for what he called community spread, not necessarily stuff going on with competition, but these guys in their social lives, and I mean, you've seen it already with when players come back on campus and Rutgers gets quarantined. Michigan State had a 14-day quarantine. I mean, that's where the problem becomes, and, you know, keeping college students out of their own way. You know, and because they're not professional athletes, you can't put them in a bubble. That's another step towards paying them if you try to do that. Colleges can't and don't want to do that. So, you know, there's a number of things here. You know, and Amish told me, he said, you know, I thought it could be done early on, but I just don't see how it could realistically be done now. Not to mention the testing issues. I think that's another thing. You know, when you start talking about testing guys multiple times a week, how quickly are you going to get those tests back? If you're getting tested on Monday or let's say Sunday after a game and you're getting tested again on Wednesday, are you going to have the test results back to travel across five states like Michigan State? I mean, four Michigan State games are in Nebraska, Iowa, Maryland, and Penn State. That's a lot of travel. 2,200 miles of travel during the middle of a pandemic. So these are all realistic issues that go simply beyond, hey, let's put the ball out there and snap it and go.
Right. I laid out at the beginning of the show, I looked at everything. Now, these are all professionals, so I pointed that out. But every problem that has happened, whether it's an NHL training camp in June, late June, to the PGA Tour, whatever, all the problems were early. And as you pointed out, problems happened when Rutgers came back onto campus. But since then, everybody else has settled down. Is that something we can learn from? Because obviously everything's settled down, and even in college football in their camps, they have settled down, except for Colorado State and Rutgers.
Right. Well, I think it's also important to understand that the only people back on campuses right now are these athletes. So what happens
to a point. Penn State has some people. So
let's say they decide we're gonna have 25% in person attendance and schooling. That increases the risk. Are you going to have other people in the dorms or just athletes? Well, you're not going to be able to do that. Are you going to just try and play football? Well, there's Title IX issues about all the women's sports. I mean, these are real issues that come up with the logic of trying to play beyond just simply football players want to play, the coaches want to play. The community itself is a big thing. I mean, you know, there are people that live in East Lansing that don't have ties to Michigan State. There are people that live in State College who don't have ties to Penn State. I mean,
that's right.
You know, do you put them in harm's way just simply for entertainment value? I don't know. I mean, you know, but at the same point, this is a big business. This is not just coaches' livelihoods, athletic directors' livelihoods, but players' potential future livelihoods. You've got guys who have things they need to prove if they want to go to the next level. You have guys that have things that they may not want to risk by putting themselves in harm's way. There are so many elements in this that, you know, here we are less than a month away from the planned kickoff that have no answers right now. And that should be the biggest concern, that these answers are still floating, and that's potentially and probably why it ends up getting canceled.
And that's why at the beginning, and we'll get your opinion on this, I advocated, look, keep making the next step. Well, the two-week minicamp thing, everybody most got through that step okay. Okay, now you're into this step. So far, people have been okay. Penn State's next testing numbers are Wednesday, by the way, that they'll release. Let's see how that goes. Then you get into contact. All right, well, now let's see how that goes. Then, of course, you get students being reintroduced into campus, which you just pointed out correctly. And now let's see how that... I think you need to see how it goes along the way and then make decisions that involve with how, to me, how it goes. How do you feel about that? You may have a completely different opinion.
you know, it's hard. It's hard because, you know, think about, I mean, just think of the bad decisions that you've seen on college campuses over the years. Not even with athletes, okay? I mean, athletes make their share of bad decisions, but students in general make their shares of bad decisions. Because that's the nature of being 18 to 23 years old. You're technically a fully formed adult physically, but mentally you got a lot to learn. And you're learning about the unknown along with all the adults right now. The medical experts are learning. I mean, it's a novel virus. You know, why is it a novel virus? Because it has not been studied before. So that's why you see things change. That's why you saw the change with no masks to masks are a good thing. Where you've seen, you know, testing is going to get you this, or, you know, I think that another great example is the respirators. Remember when the respirators were a big issue, the shortage of respirators, we need more respirators. As the virus progressed and as the medical community studied it more, it became less about respirators and more about getting people off their backs and putting them on their stomachs. I mean, this is why science is important, why science class is important, to understand that, you know, when you have something new, when you have something unknown, it needs to be studied. It needs to be, because, I mean, hey, Eduardo Rodriguez from the Red Sox, Brady Feeney from Indiana, I mean, these are high-level athletes. What do they rely on? You know, yeah, they rely on strength. Yeah, they rely on skill, but their biggest attributes are what separates those guys maybe from a double-A player in baseball or a one double-A player in football is their high level of cardiovascular systems and pulmonary systems. And if you start talking about that being a risk, then every athlete needs to pause and think about it. And they need the time to think about it. They've had 5 months to think about it, but new issues keep coming up and new explanations keep coming up because that's the nature of studying a disease. It's, you know, I really, you know, someone asked me this earlier, I feel for these kids. I feel for their parents having to make these decisions. I feel for the coaches who are basically like everybody else learning about this on the fly because they're not, as much as they like to think they know everything about everything, they don't. They're not medical experts. They rely on their medical experts. And their medical experts are still learning how to fly. So certainly it's, you know, my opinion on it, I mean, you've got to put, one kid dying from it is too many. One kid, Trevor Lawrence, losing a potential pro future because of it is too many. But I also am realistic to understand that these guys, every time they put on a helmet and pads, they go out there, they're taking certain risks. This is just a different risk altogether, that not just as an individual risk, but as a societal risk.
I should have taken more science classes and fewer broadcasting classes. All right. Chris, always a pleasure, my friend.
You just need a high school classmate who's a medical expert. That's how you get it explained to you.
See, and that's how we get around it. Perfect. I love it. Chris, thanks so much. Always appreciate you very much and your great work.
All right. See you. Take care. Be well.